Welcome to The Upshot, Multiworld Disc Golf's podcast about the latest in the disc golf world. I'm the publisher of Multiworld Disc Golf, Charlie Eisenhood, and joining me is Jamie Thomas. And we have a little history made this week, Jamie.
Oh, yeah?
We do. I mean, really, you could argue it's historic in both MPO and FPO. At Idlewild Open, this weekend's Disc Golf Pro Tour event, Darren LeMay, Multiworld Disc Golf writer, has got a story up, The Third McMahon, and you got to go check it out. The gist is this. Eagle McMahon is the first person to register back-to-back wins in consecutive events when both Paul McBeth and Ricky Wysocki were in the field since 2012 when Will Schusterick did it. And that was before either player had won a world title. Think about that. Let that settle in. Eagle, the first person since Will Schusterick in 2012 to back-to-back win events where both Paul McBeth and Ricky Wysocki were in the field.
Wow.
That's amazing. Does this mean more than just being an interesting stat, Jamie?
I think so. I think you have to take this win in context with what he went through towards the offseason. I think you have to take this context of just how hard it is to win generally on tour in back-to-back weeks. It's 3 weeks in a row for Eagle as well. He won the off-tour event down at in Alabama, just the in between Deglow and Ledgestone. So I think it's huge for Eagle, and you know, shout out to the man. He got rewarded even more when he found out his rating is up to 1054, breaking that barrier. Second highest rated player in the world. So for so many reasons, I think this is a really important stretch of golf for Eagle. It's a chance to silence the haters. It's a chance to remind people of who he is. And it's a lot of excitement as we've been starting to talk about, oh, is it Paul, Heimberg, Ricky? Is it, where's Eagle? And he's back into this top three conversation. Once again, you can't deny it at this point.
No, absolutely not. Here's why I think it's big, Jamie. Here's why I think it's especially big. When he won a week and a half ago, it was on a course where you could see him, you know, winning regularly. But I would say it's rare to see Eagle really be successful on heavily wooded courses. Not that it doesn't happen, but he rarely has shown that he can go out there and put together the 3 to 4 consistent rounds necessary to win an event on a course like Idlewild. Now, he didn't play here last year. He's usually in Europe at this time. But I am so impressed by that he won in different ways on different courses. He rallies from behind. That is, you know, a different thing. I mean, he was behind a little bit last week too, but he was always right there. This time, you know, he had to kind of make a surge. He had to go past Paul McBeth and get this win coming from behind. And I think that is particularly impressive. And as also noted in Darren's article, Eagle is still younger than Paul McBeth was when he won his first world title. So
wow.
Think about the upside that he has as a player. I mean, not that we didn't already know this, but there's a reason we've talked about Eagle as the next big thing. And we were talking about that on this show in like 2015. It's now 2020, and we're seeing the signs that he could take over. Now, I think you have to acknowledge that some things had to break his way this weekend, but we'll get to that in a little bit as we break down the full Idlewild results. FPO, historic as well. Ellen Widboom gets her first ever tour win. And it was amazing. I mean, she's emotional. She's up there. She's got tears in her eyes. And, you know, she had to battle through this epic final round, especially down the back nine, to get the win over Sarah Hokum, Katrina Allen. What a moment for Ellen Widboom. Even if she never wins another event again, it's like, that's something you never forget.
36 years old. defeats 7 world championships. Finished ahead of Holcomb, finished ahead of Katrina Allen, finished ahead of Paige Pierce. And she did it with patient, persistent golf. She did it with big putts. We saw a spark of that at D-Glow a couple weeks ago. She turned around, kept that momentum, kept that headspace, and just was there while these other players started to fade. And the craziest thing about watching Whitboom on the back nine was she was the one that began to apply the pressure to Sarah Holcomb and to Katrina Allen. Though I think, you know, Katrina, it's the wheels just started to kind of come off of her final round because she looked very much in control in the front nine.
Mm-hmm.
But it was Whitboom that was really putting the pressure on the world champions, and you started to see them miss fairways off the tee. You started to see them not make those tester range putts from 25 to 30 feet from the basket when it really counted. And there she was, just putting it down the fairway, getting it close, not missing the ones you gotta make. And at the end of the day, it was so beautiful. And, you know, sunset over the 18th green, and they're handing her the glass trophy. Man, like, Alyssa Van Lanen killed it with the images. Go check out the Pro Tour Instagram. Like, it was such a good moment. We were tearing up in the booth. I'm not even going to pretend we weren't.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And she shot the hot round in the final round. So it's not like she just, like, walked into a win because everybody was crumbling. She played really, really well in order to get the win. There were only 2 rounds all weekend under par. She shot even in the final round, but it's one of the best rounds of the entire 3-round event. So, you know, you can't just chalk it up to Paige Pierce having a bad day. No, like, Ellen Whitboom went out there and played the best and won because of it. Very cool. We'll come back to more on this as we get into the show. Ratings update. You already mentioned it. Eagles up to 1054. Paul McBeth drops down to 1056. So right now, because of COVID, there's like not that many rounds are in people's ratings. So we're seeing some more swinginess than we typically do. But I mean, there's a chance if Eagle continues to play really well, he could take over the number one spot next month in the ratings update. That is 100% possible.
Very possible. And I'm glad you said that too, because my rating fell by 11 points. And so it makes me feel a little better to remind that the swings are going to be big this year. Yeah, McBeth at 56, McMahon at 54, and then it's Wysocki at 1047, Heimberg, and Dickerson 1046. Those are the top 5 rated players in MPO, and it's, you know, that's huge. I think McMahon also joins another elite group of players. Let's just rattle it off. On the Pro Tour, he becomes only the 3rd player to win 2 Pro Tour events in a single season. The other 2, Paul McBeth, Ricky Wysocki. He's the only guy since Schustrick 8 years ago to go back-to-back over top of Wysocki and McBeth. He's only the second. He's the second guy this year to win a Pro Tour event from the Chase card. And he's the second highest player in the world. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Charlie, but I think he's only the 3rd player to reach 1050. I think only Wysocki and McBeth have reached that mark before.
As far as I know, that's right. Did Calvin Heimberg get over 1050 in the last update? Last month?
Let's look that up really quickly.
While you look that up, I will shout out some USDGC qualifications this weekend. I don't believe this has been updated yet on the UDisc Live page, but as far as we know, there were 5 spots. So Andrew Marwidi, Ezra Robinson, Michael Johansson, Matt Bell, and Paul Ulibarri qualified for USDGC this past weekend.
Those are all really good names. I'm not sure about Marweed, but I know everybody else on, I'm pretty sure everybody else on that list has played USDGC. Pretty sure Matt Bell has. Obviously, we know Michael Joe has. Ezra Robinson, he's like a perennial qualifier on Monday. If you watch Monday qualifying for USDGC, so congrats to him. He doesn't have to do that work. He's already guaranteed that spot, and somebody else may be able to actually get in at that last gasp attempt. And the answer to the Heimberg question, by the way,
yes,
1047 is okay, his highest rated.
Not quite. Yes. All right. Well, there you go. And maybe this is obvious, but Eagle's the only player to win two Pro Tour events this year in MPO.
It was a big point of emphasis on our broadcast that we've actually had five, up to this point, we had five different winners on the Pro Tour this season, which is nuts in and of itself.
Yeah, it's pretty surprising because you think, well, Paul McBeth must have won too, but no, he didn't. So there you go. Eagle with the big win. And let's talk a little bit more about this. I'm going to read from Eagle's Instagram post from the weekend. I'm sure most of you can imagine that winning a Disc Golf Pro Tour event feels like a major achievement and almost unreal. But to win two in a row, that seems only possible for aliens like Paul and Ricky. I'm not sure it has even sunk in yet, but I am more than grateful to say that I was able to list my name with said inhuman disc golf aliens with a back-to-back Disc Golf Pro Tour win at the Idlewild Open. And you know what? I think that's right. And in some ways, this like does put him into a tier that maybe you would say that he wasn't in yet. Because at the end of the day, you know, I don't care about your rating. I want to see what you do when the pressure is on and whether you can win the event or not. Like, great, you have a high rating. Okay, that's cool. Like, at the end of the day, like, as well as Calvin Heimberg has played this season, the consistency that he's shown, that he's gotten some wins, he's got a lot of second place finishes, he's been on the podium all the time. Eagle's having a better season. Back-to-back Pro Tour wins. I'm sorry. Like, the win counts, and this, to me, puts him into another category, and it renews what I believe that he could do later this year.
I mean, Nate Doss said he's the front runner for player of the year on the broadcast this past weekend, and it's really hard to argue with that. I mean, even if you want to go, and look, I think this broken hand narrative has been completely overplayed, by the way. You know, there are people saying, oh, he's a mental case, he doesn't have the maturity, blah, 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 when all that happened, because they saw him get frustrated about Portland Open, and then they saw him get frustrated in one moment at USDGC. And by the way, I've known Eagle a while. It couldn't be further from the truth. For his age, he's one of the most mature players on tour, bar none. He's wise beyond his years, especially between the ropes. And so there's been a narrative last year of this fall from grace for Eagle, and I'm really happy for the guy because he gets to step up and say, that's a bunch of BS. Go look at UDisc in 2019. The guy didn't finish outside the top 10 once. He finished outside the top 10 twice in the last three seasons, at Waco this year and at the World Championships at Smugs. Where's the fall off? He's just reaching another level with his game right now. He's only the third guy to break 1050. There's a reason for that. You have to be consistent over time. And you're right, Charlie. You got to get in and get the wins, but the rating is what tells you over time who was the best.
I get that. But I truly believe what I said. I can see that, you know, somebody has the best rating or the second best rating or whatever, but I want to look and see that they're winning. Are you winning? If you shoot great rounds, you know, half the time, and then, you know, you either have slow starts or slow finishes, and that means you don't win events, and you finish, you know, top five all the time. Like, to me, that's not as impressive as winning. It's just not. Like, Simon's a great disc golfer, but he doesn't win very much. And that's a knock. That's a real knock. I don't care what his rating is. Like, yes, he's a spectacular player, everything else, but like, he's not somebody that you look at as a real champion in the sport. It's just not. So, to me, like, yeah, obviously, if you're winning a lot, that's going to mean that your rating is going up, and those things are going to be heavily correlated. But you can be a really, really good player and just not do that much winning, and that does take some shine off of what you can do as a player.
Certainly. The cool thing I take out of this, now that you've mentioned Simon and Eagle kind of in the same paragraph here, is that nowadays in disc golf, you can be a fan. Like, you can be a fan of the guy that's winning the tournament. And you obviously, Simon has a huge fan base, so you can still be a big fan and happy and, like, see that player progressing through their journey, through their career, even if they're not winning a lot, which is super interesting and obviously a boon since they're sponsored by the same company. You know, you don't have to, like, worry about your two top dogs, you know, it's not a Ricky Bobby Cal Naught Jr. kind of scenario, if we can throw back to some Talladega Nights anyway.
All right, so let's talk about the player that was in the lead coming into the final round. And that was Paul McBeth. And it looked like we were headed towards another event where Paul McBeth was going to win. You know, there were some good players on the lead card with him, but you're thinking, he's got this. He's got a one-stroke lead. It's Paul McBeth. And he's going to win again. And what happens? Well, he goes out there, and after a really nice start to his final round, where he got four birdies in the first five holes, things kind of fell apart. He double bogeys on seven. He gets some pars where he's normally birdieing. He has another double bogey late in the round, and he's just not scoring that much. He ends up finishing with a three under, which really is not that good on the day or on the course. Chris Dickerson had a 14 under. Eagle won with a 12 under. And Paul McBeth posted on Instagram, and he said, "Inexcusable performance today. I had plenty of opportunities to capitalize, and I just failed. I'm sad that this one is over, but the benefit of touring is there is another one next week. I will learn from this one and push harder for this remaining few. Thank you all for the support, and stay tuned." And, you know, you got to tip the cap there. He owned it. It's just not the kind of performance you expect from Paul McBeth, especially after the way he played the first two rounds.
Not at all. And if you go back to your favorite thing, ratings, just scrolling through his performances this year, he's only had three rounds rated under 1020. It was the third round at the Memorial very early in the year, was 1019. And then last week at the D-Glo, 1016 rated moving day round kept him out of the pack and out of the picture on the final day. And then it's actually his lowest rated round on tour this season was that third round. It comes in at 1010 for the three under. So certainly you can understand what he's saying in that Instagram post. That's below his standard. And we know that as high as our standards are for McBeth, we've said it a million times, his are equally, if not higher, for himself. So I don't think it certainly wasn't his best showing. I mean, there's probably a whole nother Darren LeMay article in there somewhere about when's the last time he took a pair of double bogeys in a round.
Yeah,
especially right after an eagle.
Not common.
So he tried. You know, he tried. It just kind of looked like maybe for the first time ever in a somewhat healthy Paul McBeth scenario, you know, barring like the big bad injury he had 4 or 5 years ago. It's like he tried to go to the next gear in the final round, and it just wasn't there, which is odd, and I don't think it has to do with age or injury or anything like that. I think it's a very tricky course. Idlewild is hard to put it into fourth gear and to be successful on. You can be aggressive, as we saw players like Dickerson and Wysocki setting the course record on the final day. It proves you can be aggressive, but you really have to be measured in your aggression on that type of course, especially when you compare it to what are the courses that we just came off of. We come off of DDO, we come off of TPC, and we come off of D-Glo. Those are all courses where you have to be aggressive. So I guess I don't know if the gear change just kind of tripped him up. I don't expect it to be a long-term thing by any means. Still the number one player in the world at this point, but certainly there was just something missing from the final round. He tried to spark it with that great eagle putt on 16. That was like vintage McBeth. But outside of that, it just kind of wasn't there for him.
Yeah, strange. I mean, do you have any thoughts on what happened? Is it just a bad day?
It's, you know, it's tough. You have Castro and Hamus on the card, and you have Colling. You have those guys have not won in a while. The last on-tour victory for Jeremy Colling was Waco in 2017. Hamus and Castro still searching for their first tour wins. Of course, Hamus came really close at the Hall of Fame last year when he went to the playoff with Heimberg. But I don't know if it was just, maybe this is too much speculation out on a limb, but those players didn't really push him. If you look, nobody from the lead card finished better than tied for fifth. Hamus and McBeth both at 22 under par. Colling finished at 21 under par. Castro at 20. So you had, if there were one more round, the entire lead card would have fallen to at least the chase card, and you would have had four new faces for, you know, that next imaginary round there. So I don't know if it was a vibe thing. Macbeth is usually immune to that. He usually sets the pace. That's about all. I don't want to read too much into it. I don't think there's anything wrong with Paul. I just think it was an off day.
Yeah. And I'm going to say it right now. Like, I'm starting to think about USDGC. I'm starting to think about how people are playing, what the season is shaping up to look like. And I will say this right now, our subscriber bonus segment today, we're going to make some too early USDGC predictions and Women's National Championship. I'm going to call it USDGC for shorthand. I know they have slightly different names, but the MPO and FPO US championships for this year that will happen, all, you know, assuming all the COVID things go okay, in October. So we're going to make our predictions in our subscriber only bonus segment. Please note, we are in the midst of our UltiWorld Disc Golf membership drive. So this would be a great time to sign up, help us reach our goal. We're trying to get 700 new members across both the Disc Golf and Ultimate platforms. And you can check out the brand new newsletter that just came out this week, business-focused newsletter. We've got some stuff about the Sexton Firebird, about Paul Macbeth's deal with Discraft and the sports agent that represented him, as well as more information about the Disc Golf Network and the subscriber count that just keeps going up. So check it out, discgolf.ultiworld.com/subscribe. Okay, we got to talk about Chris Dickerson, because the guy, I swear it's like he's trying to be really, really good without winning and like getting the full spotlight. It's honestly amazing. It's like he just shows up, plays great, and just doesn't quite do enough to win. And so, like, he constantly floats just a little under the radar. But the guy goes out there and along with Ricky Wysocki, shoots a course record 14 under and is in second place to finish this event. He's only two shots off the win from eagle. You know, like, what more is there to say about Chris Dickerson besides the fact that if he played more total events, he would have won one by now, right? Like one of these big... I know he's won two tour championships, so don't get me wrong. I completely know that. But for whatever reason, at least for me, those haven't felt like the big wins that you would get at a major. Or even at the middle of the season. Because for me, USDGC happens, and then it feels like the season is over. And maybe that's going to change with the Pro Tour kind of being the sole focus of this year, but the weird format, all that, I don't know. It doesn't feel quite the same to me. But I gotta just give the respect to this man who just keeps going out there and balling and not quite winning.
Totally agree. It seems like he's just trying to get up the top of the leaderboard while dodging the cameras. And I say that tongue-in-cheek because, of course, like every shot he threw was on that Pro Tour victory last season at Hornets Nest, the Pro Tour finale victory. He was on camera, and he had to play through every round. He actually didn't get any buys, so he had the hardest path to win. It was kind of like a 12 seed winning the national title in college basketball or something. You know, like Dickerson's better than a 12 seed by his skill level, but I'm saying like the road he had to take
for sure
to get to the championship. Now, you bring up that format, and I do think it's interesting because you're right. It's a different format. You can't compare it to a regular tour event because everybody starts at zero each day. So it's almost like a hot round contest in the way, in the iteration that we saw for the past few years on tour. So it's just different golf. You have one round to go out, shoot hot, make the cut, and then a bunch of people fall out. So they don't get to build on what they started and try to make that comeback. Well, it's actually Chris that's kind of doing that, because while he's not yet been able to put three whole rounds together to win. I mean, it was his first round at Idlewild where he didn't take a birdie until the sixth hole of the first round. And by that point, he was already three over par. And that's the stretch of the course that you absolutely can't play over par. One through six, you've got to be under. And you've got to be four or five under if you want to catch the pace. He made mincemeat of the harder holes this weekend, and he did go bogey free in the final round with two eagles, but it's almost enough. And I do think that probably you will see him jump up and take one of these if he can get a little more out there on tour, just kind of get in that mode week in and week out. You know, I've harped on that before on the show. It's so hard to tour.
You want to shout anybody else out in the top five, top 10?
Yeah, first of all, alongside Chris Dickerson's 14 down final round, Ricky Wysocki also with that course record. Look, Wysocki moved from 22nd place to finish in fourth. Dickerson moved from 17th place going into the final round to finish in second. So you've got to give them the shout out. I mean, on the live broadcast, Eagle McMahon called his dad, and you know, his dad congratulated him, obviously, but then he was like, then he shouted out Dickerson and Wysocki himself for the round. So it was just great. And finally, shout out to Andrew Marweed. We saw him a handful of times on the show, but he really just played consistent golf, and I don't think he really got the hype. We didn't give him the hype that he deserved for the way that he was playing this weekend either.
Tough. Paul McBeth steals the spotlight for the tough round conversation for obvious reasons, but tough round for Jeremy Colling too. Big Germ shoots 3-under to match McBeth. He was one shot off the lead going into the final round and fell down the leaderboard as a result of a pretty tough round for him.
Colling thinks a lot on the course. And you know, that only gets exacerbated the more you do media. I mean, think about the guy's day. He wakes up, he has to go try to compete against these people that are doing these amazing things we're talking about. Then he has to turn around, go and do commentary on it. So he has to constantly watch that film. And while sure, you can glean some notes from it, everybody's got to do film study when you're a professional athlete. But when you do it and then you have to go out and immediately play and you know these people are on a hot streak, you can't help but have that just be a part of who you are. Like, he's part of the media now too. So, you know, you just saw him start to kind of think over some of those mid-range putts and they started to not go. He really did a great job handling his frustration. I got to give him a lot of credit for that.
That is true. I've seen him like melt down on the course. So Credit to him for not doing that.
Yeah, but it just, it just wasn't there this weekend. And it's been a long time since he's been up and kind of in that scenario and not just calling it on Jomez. So it's, you know, maybe we'll see him again. Maybe this was like breaking that rust off and getting back up. There are some courses coming up that do suit his game very nicely.
That's true. Quick shout out to Colin Morikawa for winning the PGA Championship, the first major of the year in golf. And I don't really think a lot of people saw Morikawa coming, but I just keep track of what's going on over in the sister sport.
Yeah, no, real facts. Nate and I are actually watching the rounds right now, and I saw on Instagram who won because I follow PGA Tour and stuff, and he swore me to secrecy that I would not say anything about who wins or even what happens. So we're going back through the DVR right now. We're going to finish that tournament tonight.
You guys know you're not allowed to complain about spoilers, right?
Not complaining about spoilers whatsoever.
You should put me Nate on Smith. So I can spoil it to him and see what he says.
Oh, no. I'm with Brody Smith on this one.
Brody Smith calling out the spoilers complainers. Here's a little clip from Brody on social media.
So I'm getting a couple of DMs from people saying they're upset that I spoiled live coverage by posting the winner. I just want to take this time to apologize to absolutely no one. You can't spoil live footage. What is wrong with you? It's live sports.
I don't always agree with Brody's like general golf takes. Like, he clearly comes to disc golf from the golf world and like wants to make all of the disc golf things like golf. There's a lot to be learned, I think, from that. And in some of those areas, I agree with him. And I definitely agree with him on this one. Nothing annoys me like the spoiler complainers.
Right. And hey, look, I came to disc golf from golf too. So he'll come down off of some of those positions the more he kind of immerses himself in disc golf culture. I certainly did. I used to want more things to be a little more buttoned up, a little more like the PGA Tour. And now my position is kind of like, we need to look at what they're doing and take cues from the fundamentals and the foundational things that they do to build a successful tour. But you got to have your own thing on it, too. So,
yep.
But you can't. But this is when I absolutely agree. I don't care what sport it is. It's live.
It's live.
There's 12,000 people that are paying to watch it. Like, yes, Jomez has a big following. Yes, post rounds. If you like post coverage, great. Ain't mad at you. But just like Nate and I are sitting here, we're going to watch the conclusion at TPC Harding. I'm just not going to tell him what happens.
And you can't go on Twitter. You can't go on Google. You got to know that stuff's going to be out there.
Yeah.
So if you don't want the spoiler and you're going to watch it later, then you got to do the work not to see it.
It's just ridiculous. There's 12,000 people that are paying to watch live disc golf right now. Let that sink in. 12,000 people are spending what they spend on Netflix every month for just disc golf content. 12,000 people, those people have every right to talk about the winner on social media as soon as it happens. Period. Done.
All right, let's talk a little bit about FPO. Obviously, Ellen Widboom with the awesome win, her first on tour. Jamie, I know you. We were talking a little ratings update beforehand. Let's take a look. What's going on in the ratings in FPO?
Paige Pierce falls back 4 points to 984, still 12 clear of the second highest rated woman in the world. Charlie, can you guess who that is? And I'll give you a hint. She breaks 970 for the first time in her career.
I'm going to go with Evelina Salonen.
Ooh, she is third. She is currently 970 rated, though she has been 971
at
her peak.
Is it Sarah Holcomb?
Holcomb is also 970 rated. She's tied for third highest in the world, and she's been 970
as well.
She's been
before. Okay.
You got it. Third time's a charm.
Well, I don't know. Who else has been playing that well? It's not Katrina. I'll guess I'll go with Missy Gannon.
Dang. Striking out this time
is
Kristen Tatar.
Tatar, okay. I should have stayed in Europe. I should have stayed in Europe.
That is you. I thought you had it when you were on the Salonen track. She is 972 rated. Congratulations to Kristen Tatar. She clearly wants to come over and tour in the U.S. Can't right now. Still tearing it up over in Europe. So your top five women in the world go Pierce at 984, Tatar 72, Salonen at 70, Holcomb at 70, Hinne Blomroos 965 for the top five in the world. The division's going up. The skill level is increasing. It's really exciting to watch FPO these days.
Definitely is. Well, let's take a look at this final round and the breakdown in FPO. Widboom beats Sarah Holcomb by stroke. And what a finish, just like down the stretch of this, the back nine. Like, it was so exciting, Jamie. You had Widboom, Holcomb, Allen, and Pierce all really in the mix. And even Missy Gannon a little bit. You were watching every shot. Mm-hmm. Give us a sense of how this played out, and like, when did you realize that Widboom was going to win this thing? Was it not until the 18th?
It was. Well, yes, because again, it's Ellen Widboom. Like, no disrespect, but I want to know. I saw some stat about the grip six pick six when Patrick Brown made the lead card, and it was something like six or seven total people in the grip six pick six had him. So I want to know what the stats for Ellen Widboom are and how many people had her in their picks. It's just not a name you're going to pick, and you can't blame the fans for that. She was clearly in third. Katrina Allen honestly looked in control of the round through the front nine. She was one down bogey-free through nine holes. Sarah Holcomb, she was even through the first six, took a couple of bogeys on seven and nine, and it was really the Katrina Allen-Sarah Holcomb battle. Katrina takes the lead where Holcomb began the round with it, and Allen's just kind of hanging around. She was even through the front, shot even on the front and on the back. One birdie, one bogey on the front side, two and two on the back nine. But it was really that back nine that was so detrimental to Sarah Holcomb's finish, because starting on hole 10, she takes her third bogey in four holes. Then she would proceed to play the entire back nine, five over par. That's how far Widboom was back of the lead when they made the turn. Five strokes. And Widboom had said during her post-round interview after the second round that she has to eliminate double bogeys. What did she do? She came out and did that. Three birdies, only three single bogeys, and it was just Holcomb missed two putts that she had to have on holes 14 and 15, And then you just saw, like, you're wondering, does the pressure get to her? Does the pressure get to her? And Whitbourne just played phenomenally down the stretch. It was so much fun to watch.
Yeah. I mean, it's to withstand that pressure, to go 92% from circle 1x putting. And that's not just like a little, like, you know, made two out of three. She made 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 C1X putts and missed just one. So that is remarkable on its own, because it means that there were a lot of times where there was a pressure putt. There was a tester. You had to put one in, and she needed every single one of those. Like, you don't see players going above 90% in FPO from C1X very often. It's not super common. So credit to Whitbourne for burying the putts and getting the win.
Missy Gannon like putting stats this week from Ellen Whitbourne.
Yeah, and Gannon's still in the top five, continuing to play well.
Yeah, she was hanging around the 10th spot, I believe. Kind of, you know, was always, when you see the top 10 leaderboard on the show, you see her name kind of pop in and out over the weekend. She wasn't ever really in contention, but she did do a good job to jump back into that top five as well on the final day.
Quick shout out to throw it back to last week, Leah Sinigini. Jamie, you haven't looked. Maybe you have, but indulge me. Do you think she finished in last, or did she not?
Ooh, I mean, I didn't think last week she was going to finish in last, so what did she end up doing?
She finished in 29th place, which was fourth from the bottom. But you know what? She did pretty respectably. Like, there were some other very solid players with scores in her range. With the ratings update, she went up 98 points and is now rated 851.
Yeah, she played very consistent golf too, 876, 870, 870. And, you know, when she entered the tournament, she was 753 rated. So, quality.
Quality.
Good for Leah. It was great to have her on the show and hear her story. And actually, I think she was playing with Hannah Macbeth.
That's
on
right.
Either the second or the second third round.
Yeah, yeah.
So Hannah's got an FPO podcast over on Disc Golf Network called The Partee, which is good. I'm a fan. I've been listening to it. And I kind of gave her the heads up. I sent her a text. I was like, by the way, we just interviewed Leah. If you guys get to chatting, you know, you guys may hit it off, because she's brand new to the game. So, yeah, shout out to Hannah for that podcast as well. It's a good one.
Yeah. You know, some missed opportunities out there, though. I think, you know, Sarah Hokum was even through the first six, all pars, and then took a bogey, took another couple bogeys, bogey, double bogey, bogey, and kind of just let it get away from her. You know, ends up shooting seven over, which on this course is not a bad score, but didn't get a single birdie on the day. You know, didn't make a circle two putt, and just didn't give herself enough birdie opportunities, really. And, you know, ended up finishing a stroke behind Whitbourne. But you got to feel like Sarah Hokum is thinking, I really could have had this.
Yeah, she had four birdies during the second round when she shot two under par, 1,000 rated round.
Best round of the weekend.
Yeah, and she putted better. 80% C1X putting on the third round, 78% C1X putting when she had those four birdies. So I think Sarah Hokum, unfortunately, is going to have that coulda, woulda, shoulda. You know, obviously, you hope not. Maybe like after the season's going, because there's really no time. These players are already doing all the pressers for Ledgestone, which is why we couldn't get a player as a guest on this week. And they're getting ready to battle a whole new set of courses. But it certainly was an opportunity lost for Sarah Hokum to grab that tour victory. But again, like Jeremy Colling, relies on the forehand, can really kind of carve some lines in the woods. So the rest of the season does still set up for her. So it's not bad to see her in second at the end of the day.
Before we talk Ledgestone, we're going to talk with Steve Dodge, tournament director of the MVP Open. Of course, you know him from the Pro Tour. And we're going to catch up with him on a few things. What's coming up with this tournament? What do you think's going on with the Pro Tour right now? And he's got a controversial new pay to volunteer deal going for the MVP Open. You're volunteering, but you pay to be a volunteer. So we'll talk with him about that as well. Stay with us. It's The Upshot. Joining us now on The Upshot is the tournament director of the MVP Open and the founder of the Disc Golf Pro Tour, Steve Dodge. Steve, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Charlie. Nice to talk to you again. Hello there, Jamie. Happy day.
Hey.
Steve, it's great to hear from you. And first and foremost, I got a copy of the Birdie Disc Golf game from you in the mail a couple weeks back. Much appreciated. How's everything going with the game so far?
I would say that things are going much better than I ever anticipated. The game has gotten very good reviews all around and is selling much faster than we expected. Because we hit our stretch goal on Kickstarter, we ended up making it in the U.S. And what that meant is that we made 5,000 copies. And the really fun thing is that based on projections, it looks like we're going to sell out sometime this winter. We've already started making adjustments, like removing the first run badge for the second run of the game, which will probably need to happen sometime this winter. Very exciting.
Who's the best character in Birdie? I've been playing a lot of this with my wife lately, and we've been having a discussion on who's the most powerful character in this game, and Simon Lizotte's character power is pretty hard to beat, in my opinion. What's your take on that?
Simon Lizotte is obviously very good. It can go both ways. You have to be careful with him, because if you take a risk on a hole that can punish you, it can go really bad really fast. Paul McBeth is obviously very good. If you string together some birdies, he becomes very hard to beat. You need to play some good cards in good places. Of the standard players, it's really interesting because some people really like the Karma card, so they go for Karma Casey. I personally like Monaco Mac because I like the idea of just getting one extra focus chip per hole that I can pinpoint when I want to use that. So one person has complained that Sawyer the Streak is way too powerful, but he's only powerful if he gets two or three birdies in a row. So if, as long as you can prevent him from doing that, there you go. It's really fun watching the strategy develop and seeing how other people are utilizing the players in combinations. Like, there's 10 different players, so to do all the combinations was almost impossible. But hearing of some combinations is really fun with people sending us questions and comments and in general, adulation. And I'll go ahead and give myself a little pitch. We actually have, starting on Sunday, the Kickstarter for the expansion pack. We have two new courses coming out, and the Kickstarter for the expansion pack kicks off on Sunday, Ledgestone Sunday. And I don't know if you guys want me to announce the two courses on air, or
let's,
if you just
do
want
it.
To leave it up.
Let's get the scoop okay. Right here.
Well, Jamie, can you guess one of the two courses that we're announcing at Ledgestone?
Is it Ledgestone?
It is, in
fact, Eureka?
Lake Eureka. It is Eureka. Very nice. Good. And Charlie, can you guess the other course? It's the only course that was rated higher on UDisc's top 10 courses.
Oh, above Maple Hill, you're saying?
Above, oh yeah, higher than Maple Hill. Sorry.
It's the one that they just played a Silver Series at, right? I forget the name of it off the top of my head, in the Midwest somewhere.
You mean in Sweden?
That's not what I was thinking.
No, you're so thinking of Harmony Bends.
I'm thinking of Harmony Bends, but it must be Jarva.
Oh, it is Jarva, in fact. Yes, very good.
Wow.
Harmony Bends is a very good one to discuss in the future, but we've got Jarva and Ledgestone coming out. And Jamie, to your question about who the best player is, playing Eureka as Simon is a real challenge.
Okay. So the character attributes are actually going to interact differently with the different course designs compared to Maple Hill. Is that the design element that I'm hearing in this expansion?
100%. It's really exciting because, for example, playing Simon at Ledgestone, he's very good at taking risky shots, but at Ledgestone, a lot of them don't pay off because you can go OB on almost every hole. One thing that we have not yet done, but I would love to do, is to everybody takes one character and then you play all three courses. You play Maple Hill, you play Jarva, you play Ledgestone or Eureka, and you have to stay as that character across all three, and your strategy is going to change, and it's really fun.
Awesome. It sounds similarly challenging to playing three rounds in real life. Like, it's going to take a while, right?
It's going to take a while. The 9-hole game takes about an hour and a half to 2 hours. The 18-hole takes double that. And to play three rounds in a day would be significant.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the MVP Open coming up. There's been a bunch of changes. There's been a bunch of stuff going on. The event has been postponed by a couple of weeks to allow for the players to be able to come into Massachusetts without, you know, significant quarantine issues in Massachusetts. And I know that you just announced that there will be no spectators this year. So can you give us a little bit of just info, like, how's it going? It must be difficult to plan an event amidst all the pandemic changes.
This year has definitely been challenging in ways that are not, that events are not normally challenging. Normally we're struggling right now trying to make sure we can get as many parking spaces open and making sure that we have people to manage all the spectators. And this year we're struggling. Well, we're not struggling, but we're making sure that we have appropriate staff to keep everybody, spaced out well. There's no players meeting. There's no buffet. There's no party. It's going to be a very different year this year. I'm blown away. I'm not blown away. It's as I would have expected, but I am thrilled with the support that the Pro Tour has been giving me. I'm genuinely giddy to be an event on the Pro Tour. Working with Jeff Spring and Seth Fendley on this side of the equation has been wonderful. We had a great call, two great calls with the Board of Health here in Worcester County, and going through the logistics about how to keep everybody spaced out, how much time we can allow players to have during warmups, how much time they'll have after their rounds where they can hang around. Making sure that all the staff has masks on and keeps everybody socially distanced, how you clean the porta potties, how you manage the water. There's lots of new things this year. And, frankly, having Jeff on that call with the Board of Health, I think made that call go much better. He's very good at speaking the language that they understand and want to hear. And I did a very good job of just being quiet and saying, yes, we can do that.
Well, let's drill down on this a little bit here, because there will be cynical people out there on the internet, and I'm not one of them here, but they're going to say, okay, well, yeah, Steve Dodge is going to come on and say, it's great to work with the Pro Tour. His event is on. You know, of course he's going to say that in this moment. And of course I know working with Jeff Spring and Seth is a very good thing as well. But what is that like? I mean, this was what you were running last year, and you're on the other side of this coin. Like, is this 100% real? You're having a very good experience working with these guys now?
Jamie, I don't remember being this happy in a very long time.
That's awesome.
The Pro Tour was a financial, a mental, and a physical strain on me. On me personally, it was an endeavor that I've dreamed of for, well, obviously since I started playing the game, but seriously, 2003 and 2004, when we built Maple Hill, the goal was to show people, look, if you have a pro shop and you have a course, and it's a good course, you can have a tournament and they can all work in synergy and you can make this whole thing blossom. And if 10 other people can do this, we could link them all up and make a tour. It didn't occur to me that I would be the person to push the whole tour concept, but I wanted to help grow all those events. And then joined the PDGA board of directors, tried to push it through, failed, was on the NT committee, tried to push the concept through, failed. Consistently trying to make these changes, and then saying in 2000, 13, 14, and 15, just saying, okay, screw it. I'm going to go for it. Nate Heinold and Jeff Spring, in fact, were two of the people that joined, that were the first supporters of the idea and said, let's see if you can actually make this go. And, I'm 100% blessed to have been given the opportunity in my life I've been a player. I've been a store owner. I've been a manufacturer. I've been a tournament director. I've been a staff. I've been a spectator, and to be able to put all of those things together and start the tour is, I mean, it's honest. I'm not going to cry. I promise, but it's honest to goodness, like the dream of my life. Like I've accomplished something that I believe is significant and is going to help the sport of disc golf in perpetuity. There's easily dozens of people playing disc golf professionally, which was 100% of the goal. These people are so good at this sport. And just like all of us, we love this sport so much that we give everything we have to it. Like I started a board game, and the first thing I'm obviously going to do is make a disc golf board game. I started a board game company with my brother. And being able to, going through last year was really hard. After the sale of the Pro Tour to Todd and Jeff, about a month later, I was having dinner with my mom, and she literally said to me, "It's nice to have you back." And she said it had been about 4 or 5 years since she'd really seen me, because it was very difficult. And being able to hand it off to people as capable, and as caring as Todd and Jeff are, is a dream come true. I'm so happy to have an event on the Pro Tour, and for you to say Steve Dodge founded the Pro Tour, I got goosebumps just thinking, holy, that's me. And it just makes me super duper happy. And I do want to give one more shout out to Seth Fendley. Last year was really, really hard. And Seth and I feel like we had a huge horse and we were just dragging it behind us saying, we're gonna go. And there's no way the tour would exist without Seth Fendley.
So you've seen everything unfold this year. You're in the midst of it yourself, dealing with how to manage your own event. Grade the Pro Tour in 2020.
Wow, that's a loaded question. I'm going to give the Pro Tour in 2020 a C+.
C+.
A C+.
Okay.
And I'll give the Pro Tour in 2016 through 19 a D, maybe a D-. But where I'm coming from is where I want the sport to be, not how, I mean, relative to the resources that we have, they're obviously doing an A. They're knocking it out of the park with what we have. But I want so much more. So I'm giving a C+ because I definitely passing. I feel like they've turned the corner. The subscriptions on Disc Golf Network, like I hoped last year, but didn't come through, are making this a viable economic business. And that's, so they are, it's absolutely a passing grade. They're swapping cameras more. They're jumping. I think at one point during Idlewild, I saw them covering 4 cards. It was fascinating. Like Johnny has got to be going crazy back there. But if we just had 2 more people back there with Johnny, he could do so much more. So I'm giving a C+ because I want to get to B and A, and there is so much more that we can do. I am 100% riveted when I'm watching this live broadcast. They're knocking it out of the park with the resources that they have. I'm really excited about all the subscriptions and all the people watching, because that's just going to give them more and more resources to keep pushing this whole thing bigger and better.
I respect that. You know what? I got to tell you, I respect that you come on the show and are not just going to feel like you have to say B or A. I mean, because look, Disc Golf Network, Pro Tour, new heights are happening this year, but I think it's very important to keep your eye on the bigger prize and to keep your eye on the long term. So I just want to tell you, I respect the fact that you can come and just keep it real like that, because of course we want to do better each and every weekend and build on what you started back in 2016. Okay, so from one potentially internet firestorm topic to another, you are charging volunteers to come work the MVP Open. This is a very interesting process that you're doing, something you're implementing. And I have a follow-up, but I kind of want to hear what you have to say about it first, and then I have a thought afterwards. But charging people to work at the MVP Open, Steve, question mark, question mark, question mark.
So, Jamie, that's a great question, and I can understand the firestorm that seemed to have been caused by charging people to volunteer at the event. One thing that happens when people come to an event and volunteer, as we've seen in the past, is maybe they don't take it quite that seriously. Maybe they're not that conscientious. Maybe they're not worried about showing up on time. And charging people actually resolves all of those issues. The other really good side of this is we've worked with MVP Disports, the title sponsor of the MVP Open, and they've put together a really good staff pack for the staff. The staff pack includes an Axiom. It's going to come with an MVP Open iron-on patch, so we can affix that on that bag, and you've got a custom bag. You're also getting three MVP Open discs with exclusive stamps, one of which will be signed by the champions of the tournament after the tournament. Everybody obviously gets a shirt. We're going to get everybody a Maple Hill neck gaiter so that they can wear a mask comfortably and stylishly. Tons of MVP knickknacks. Everybody gets lunches and drinks. The staff pack is worth more than $100. And the really nice thing is, because the staff is paying to be a part of the event, number one, we are recouping some of the costs that we're losing, some of the income we're losing from spectators.
Most importantly, it gives us an ability to give the staff a fantastic experience. They will get a really nice pack, and we're able to have somebody, we should have done this in the past. We're able to have somebody more dedicated to making sure that what the staff experiences is really good. And one thing we've read is that we have higher retention rates when you charge staff to come and volunteer. So they're able to have a great time. They're able to give the players a much better experience, and everybody comes back. We're really excited that almost half of our staff is going to be brand new, and they're going to be buffeted by the fantastic staff we've had in the past. So I don't see this as a controversial issue. I see this as a really good step forward.
To just go back to something that you said at the beginning, you said you had a lot of demand right away. Have you already sold out all of your volunteer positions?
No, we're a little bit more full than we were last year. Last year, I think we had close to 30 people total, and a little under 20 people per day. And we're over those numbers already. I look forward to getting even more people. I think that we'll probably end up somewhere around 50 or 60 total staff, and somewhere around 30 per day.
So with everything that you're having to think about with the COVID restrictions, obviously we just saw that Massachusetts reduced its outdoor event gatherings from, I believe, 100 to 50. Is this going to affect the MVP Open further than it already has? And you know, do you expect any more headwinds in the weeks leading up to the event?
Well, people in the Northeast are generally very good about wearing masks and being aware and socially distancing and not traveling out. And, you know, obviously not enough to go to movies and things like that, but just in general, being aware and safe. And I expect that things will start to calm back down now that they've put these further restrictions on. We have had to make adjustments, for example, limiting the amount of time before players are, that the players have to practice before their round. And then once they finish their round, turning in their scores and then not hanging around significantly afterwards. So there are significant adjustments that are happening on the ground. I wouldn't expect those would make a big impact for people watching at home.
If I understand correctly, the players who are in Vermont for Green Mountain, who then go to Massachusetts for MVP, won't face additional quarantine restrictions because they're coming from a state that is on the green list, you know, if you will, for Massachusetts. What are players who are not coming from Vermont going to need to do in order to be able to participate at the MVP Open?
So Massachusetts has a travel page on their website. I'll go ahead and just give a shout out to Charlie Baker, our governor. He's been killing it. He's been really good about communicating and getting the word out. And I feel like his plans have been well thought out and well implemented. Before you travel to Massachusetts, if you're outside of New York, New Jersey, Hawaii, or New England, you need to get a negative COVID test within 72 hours of the time that you're leaving. Or you need to quarantine for 2 weeks before you come to Massachusetts. And there is a travel form that you fill out on the website, on the Massachusetts government website. And there's a link to that from our page. And we've also emailed that to all of the players. So that exists, and that's how it's happening. So if you're coming from California and you're not going to play the GMC, you're just coming out for the MVP Open, that's how you're going to have to do it.
Before we let you get out of here, any major changes to the course this year? I know you guys have been working on a diamond layout up at Maple Hill. Any kind of surprises in store for the 2020 edition of the tournament?
I am so happy you asked that, Jamie. This year up at Maple Hill has been the year of the women's course. I don't even remember. I think it was probably 2015 or 16. Oh, it was probably 16 when the Pro Tour started. It was when we first really focused in and probably had seven or eight different holes for the women. And that number has been growing each year. And this year they have a legitimate diamond course that is designed for them. We did some looking at the stats from last year, and holes 10 and 16 and 17 needed some work. And they've got their own tees on those holes now. They also have their own tee on 18 as well. Which is just a shot that I've always wanted to implement. And so I'm very excited about the changes we've made to the women's course. And there is now a course at Maple Hill called Diamonds that you can come and play. It's in difficulty. It's basically between blue and gold. And some of the shots are spectacular. Like I know that if I was playing the MVP Open, I would much rather play the diamond than the gold. Just being a standard human, as opposed to these other humans that play the gold course well. So yeah, the gold course, I mean, the diamond course is phenomenal, and I'm really excited to show it off September 11 to 13.
Anything else that folks should know about this year's MVP Open before we let you go?
You'll be able to watch online through Disc Golf Network if you have a subscription on Friday and Saturday. Sunday will be free through YouTube, or you can watch through the Disc Golf Network. Everything's shown live. I believe that Jomez and Gatekeeper and GK Pro and the Disc Golf Guy will also be covering cards for post-production. So it's going to be just as well covered as always. And I've got to say that the job that Seth and Jeff and the Pro Tour have done, and I'll just use this word, to salvage this season is phenomenal. We lost a couple events. They picked up a couple of events. And oddly enough, we're going to have the same number of events and hopefully have a great tour championship. And I'm really excited to be a part of it all.
Thank you so much. Steve Dodge with us here on The Upshot. We'll talk to you soon, Steve.
Talk to you guys. I hope to talk to you many more times before the tournament. And Charlie, good luck splicing all this together.
I got it under control. Thank you very much, Steve. Bye-bye.
Good day. Bye.
The Upshot is presented by Pound Disc Golf. You know they make the best bags in the sport. Go get yourself a custom Ockendorp or a custom Carlton. You can customize every element of the bag, the zipper colors, the liner colors, the patterns that you want. Get the bag of your dreams. You don't have to pick one out of the lineup that's on the stock availability. You can make the one exactly the way you like it. Don't hesitate. Get in line right now. PoundDiscGolf.com. Get yourself a custom Ockendorp. Welcome back to The Upshot. Always appreciate Steve Dodge coming on and speaking with just the most brutal honesty. I mean, it's a blessing and a curse, you know, for Steve Dodge. He just speaks what's on his mind. He's completely straightforward with what he's thinking. And I have to be honest, when I teed it up and I said, you know, grade the Pro Tour this year, I'm expecting him to, you know, give a little, you know, a B plus, A minus. And he throws out the C plus. I was like, damn, okay. I mean, I think he backed up why he said that. But I think it shows you the kind of big vision guy that Steve Dodge is.
And I'm not blowing smoke either when I said I appreciated that. Because let me tell you something. In today's day and age, in social media, call out and cancel culture, and you know, we all know exactly what I'm talking about. That's where we are in the world today. It's like if you don't say the most effusive, glowing praise about another entity or another person when asked, you're like slamming them. You're digging them. I mean, go read any news article headline nowadays. It's everybody slamming or, you know, it's all these like aggressive terms, and somebody says something completely reasonable. And I think it's completely reasonable for Steve Dodge to come out and say, hey, they're doing a better job than what I was able to do, which was, you know, first of all, the honest self-reflection there is appreciated. And then B, to come out and say, hey, you still got roads to travel. You still got to climb. It's a great start. Keep going. And frankly, I agree with him.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think about the $99 volunteer plan?
I have no problem with it. And I think he did a pretty good job of explaining why. Look, I've been a TD, as I've talked about on the show. There are people that, and they're amazing volunteers. I'm not slamming anybody. There are amazing volunteers that come out and give their heart and soul because they love it. And then there are people who come out and they want to do something for 30 minutes, and then they want to hang around and get all the perks. And when you're running with this event, like, he's trying to get it from a C-plus grade to where he could turn around and go like, oh yeah, the Pro Tour, now it's a B, now it's an A. And this is, he's putting money where the mouth is. You got to have event staff, whether they're volunteers or not, it doesn't really matter. If they're event staff, they're event staff. They're there to do the job. And if that helps people buy in and do it more, and it helps support the event and people want to do it, great. It's not new in disc golf. Tom Schott did it at the 2011 World Championships. Let me tell you, there were some people who, I'm going to borrow one of your phrases, Charlie, were outraged for others at the concept. And guess what? He sold out every single spot in 2011. And people got these players packs that were badass. Or volunteer packs that were badass, and people were trying to buy the pieces off of them, but they didn't want to sign up and pay less than retail to get a huge swag pack and to be in the middle of everything. So, you know what? He's a guy with bold vision, and he's taking the risk, and I think it's going to pay off.
You know, this is common practice on the PGA Tour,
exactly,
which I think should be noted, and. If people are signing up, then what's the problem? You know, if people want to get all outraged and be like, this is crazy, well, okay, then don't do it. I mean, like, then it's not for you, I guess. Like, if you're like, I don't want the bag and the discs and the this and the that, and, you know, I just want to be able to go and get to watch, basically. Well, too bad. Like, it's coronavirus year. Like, this is a great chance to try something like this. And if they can't fill it because people aren't signing up, well, then either it's too expensive or people aren't into it. So, in my mind, this is just like a let the market decide kind of situation. And if you don't like the offering, then you don't have to sign up. It at least to me, it makes some sense for there to be there be some skin in the game when it comes to saying that you're going to volunteer. Because guess what? If the thing is just like, hey, please show up and volunteer at our event and, you know, sign up here to say that you're going to come. Do you know how easy it is to then just not go? Yeah, you wake up in the morning and you're a little hungover. Forget it. I'm not going to go. Well, then they don't have a volunteer that they were expecting. Well, if you put $100 in and you know you're going to get back $100 worth of value, including if you think about this, the disc signed by the champs, you know, whatever disc it is, you'd probably turn around and sell that thing for over $100 on eBay.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm going to condone the scalping, but I'm just saying.
It'll
so
happen.
If you have to have the $100 paid and then you don't go, well, then that hurts, right? So I don't know what the fee should be. Whether it's $100, it's $50, it's $20, I don't know. But that's going to make sure that people show up and care to do it. And they have the PGA Tour has this as a long-established policy, and they have no problem at all getting people to volunteer because in some ways it's a really cool thing to do. You get to be up close and personal as essentially a spectator and be right there, and then you get all these other perks. I mean, to me, it seems like a no-brainer. Like, if I lived in Massachusetts, I'd probably do it.
Oh, no doubt. And I'm feeling spicy about this. I don't think I've had a spicy drop on the show in a while, but you know what I'm so sick of in this sport?
Uh-oh.
Just literally sick.
Uh-oh.
I am so sick of the cheap mentality, and I'm so sick of people getting on the internet and taking down other people that are trying to build something because they have this thing in their mind that that everything in disc golf has to be free, that the sport will somehow not be as good when there's people who are willing to put money into it. It's the most backwards-ass logic I've ever heard in my life, and I'm tired of it. If you don't want to do it, don't do it. Don't go out and try to get some pitchfork social media mob riled up against a guy that's trying to keep his course open and a guy that's trying to keep his tournament operating at a high level so that the players that you love can go and give their best effort and get paid for their skills. Like, it's ridiculous. What is your end goal in tearing these people down? We're not here getting rich just for the hell of it and smoking fat cigars in some swanky New York City lounge.
I'm sweating in my New York City one-bedroom apartment right now. No cigars in sight, Jamie.
Yeah, we're putting this money back into the machine to try to make it better for people. Like, it's like once people see a paywall, they forget that on the other side, the people operating that paywall, they're disc golfers too. They just realize that if they don't bring any income in, that they're going to go broke in a few years.
Or
they're going to burn themselves out.
You want to hear the problem? Here's the problem.
Lay it down.
The problem is everyone is fine with paying a ton of money for discs. Okay, like that, no one has a problem with. Anything else, right, that costs money, people complain about. The tournament's too expensive, the this, the that. Like, I don't actually think disc golfers are, like, at their core, like, being cheap, because many disc golfers spend literally thousands of dollars buying discs. But what I want to point out is that the disc companies don't need any help. The manufacturers are printing money. They are doing incredibly well. They are multi-million dollar organizations, the big ones. Don't get me wrong. They're really important for the sport. They do a lot to give back. They support a lot of these events. I'm not vilifying them. But what I am saying is that as we've had these conversations on the show over the winter, we had the tournament director roundtable. What did those TDs say? You got to get paid. These people need to get paid. They are doing incredibly important work, and then people like don't want to pay to go to the tournament. You got me now going, Jamie. What it is that you get a sense in your mind of like what things are supposed to cost, and then those are the established norms, and when there's deviation from the norms, it feels wrong to you. But what I want to see happen is that the norms get updated. That we recognize that it is important that, you know, the tournament directors get paid and that the course designers get paid and that the media companies have subscribers. And like, these things are really important too. And just because you're used to getting free coverage or you're used to paying very low cost for the tournament doesn't mean that that's the way that it should be when we're thinking about how, as we all like to say, we're going to grow the sport. you know, it'd be great if everybody shifted 20% of their disc golf spending from discs to supporting other elements of disc golf. Because for the healthy growth of the sport to continue, we need organizations and media companies and all of the other peripheral things in disc golf to also be successful beyond just the manufacturers.
Just to cap off exactly what you're saying, Charlie, you're so spot on here. If you're coming back and saying to that, well, I don't want to support the tour, I don't care about the tour, there's more organizations. There's Edge, there's Uplay. These organizations go out into schools and do special classes to teach kids how to play disc golf. You know, there's I work with Disc Golf Park, and they have options for schools. They do low-price six-hole short courses for schools and, like, churches, things like that, you know, community organizations. So there are ways to support this game that aren't just going towards the tour. If that's not your cup of tea, that's okay. But the point is, if we ever want this to be more than just a hobby for a lot of people, if we ever want people to be able to make a reasonable living and actually be able to spend a full set of time and attention to make the sport better, you have to be able to pay them what at least some fraction of what they're worth.
Let's talk some Ledgestone.
Let's talk Ledgestone.
It's coming up this weekend. Quick turn. So right back at it on the Disc Golf Pro Tour, and we'll be in Peoria, Illinois. Jamie, you got the quite the work cut out for you with dual broadcasts.
Yeah. So Ledgestone is going to be four rounds, and it's going to be, I think we can successfully call it old school style at this point. As far as the live broadcast goes, there's going to be two separate ones, FPO. Ooh, West Coasters, I feel for you and I feel with you. We're starting our broadcast, I think, at 5:45 in the morning Pacific time. we're going to do 4 hours of that, have a quick break, and then our poor camera operators are going to have to drive an hour away to get to the next course to turn around and do another four-hour broadcast for the MPO in the afternoon.
Damn.
Which is going to start somewhere around lunchtime, I think 2 p.m. tournament local, so 11 Pacific. Don't quote me on that. Check out all the course schedule, and you can check on lisopen.com. That's the Ledgestone site, or the Disc Golf Pro Tour website for all the fine details.
I got a spicy prediction for you.
What you got?
Eagle not going to win three in a row.
What? How so?
Eagle will not be playing at the Ledgestone Open this weekend. He is, I think he mentioned this when he was on the interview with us last week or 2 weeks ago, or whenever it was. That he was not planning on playing Ledgestone, and he is not registered, so he won't be there. Should be a great event. You know, I pretty much most players are going to be there. And I think Simon is going to be back in the field after missing this past weekend. I'm actually, don't quote me on that. He's not on the UDisc page, so maybe I'm wrong.
I know there's some concerns. Eagle mentioned some concerns about his ability to kind of stay in, like, the social distancing traveling pod kind of scenario.
Yep.
Going into Peoria. So I know that is a concern just with the logistics of this event. This event, it's hard to pull off. It's actually very impressive that they can pull this event off. None of these courses are close to each other, and they're using a lot of courses when you consider all of the different pools from MPO, you know, down on to, like, amateur, intermediate, that kind of stuff. So it's a large operation that they're running out there in Illinois.
Yeah. Simon Lizotte not registered right now. So, but Paul McBeth will be there, Ricky Wysocki, Calvin Heimberg, and all the top FPO players as well. So what should we know, Jamie? We got a little Northwood, we got a little Eureka.
Yeah, so for the MPO, it's going to be the first time that they're going to play two different courses in a single event since the Memorial. Their Thursday and Friday rounds, they will play Northwood Gold, which, of course, Charlie, you remember that made its debut at the World Championships last year, that massive par 5, number 12.
Unforgettable.
Yeah, I think it made the Disc Golf Pro Tour Dream 18. It also made our Dream 18. A lot of fun. I think 13 is a great hole right after that too. Some very nice longer challenging wooded par 4s and 5s. And then they will move over to the Lake Eureka Temp course, where we've seen the event traditionally finish for the Saturday and Sunday rounds. For FPO, they're at Sunset Hills the entire weekend. That was where they played all of their rounds for the World Championships as well. And I have to say, I really like this course for FPO. I thought it created some great drama when we were watching it live last year, and I'm looking forward, especially with the way we've seen that division kind of play out the competition since the restart. It's going to be a really good one at Sunset Hills, you know, despite the fact that I don't know how many people are going to watch that early in the morning, especially on the first couple rounds, but I hope people can tune in for the finale because it should be good.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. So definitely tune in this weekend. Starts August 13th. Oh, I almost forgot to mention before we wrap up today's show, the CBS Sports Network coverage has been announced when it's going to be happening.
That was just today, right?
That was today. That was this morning. So it'll be August 26th through 29th, 4 days, 7 p.m. Eastern each day on CBS Sports Network, 1 hour broadcasts, rounds 1, 2, and 3 of the Dynamic Discs Open, the first 3 days, and then a high stakes skins match for the fourth and final day, for the final hour. So it's all locked in. As far as I understand, the shows have been finished, or at least are in their final drafting. And so we're, you know, I guess about 2 weeks away from the debut of this coverage on the CBS Sports Network.
Exciting. We'll have to see what happens there. I honestly don't really know what the actual show is going to look like. I haven't heard anything from the inside, and I really actually haven't tried to look into it. I'm just going to kind of go in like the rest of us and just sit and watch and take it in and react to what we're seeing. Certainly a new thing, or at least a twist on a new thing. This is not the first time disc golf has been done like a pre-produced show and been on a network, but certainly this is a very favorable time slot, and the gamble that Dynamic Discs is making with this deal, this is the best chance, I think, to have it pay off, given what network it's on and when it's being played.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to complain about Wednesday through Saturday, 7 p.m. time slots. I mean, you could do better, right? I mean, a little bit. You could get, like, Friday nights. Saturday night's not the best night to be on TV. You'd rather probably have 8 or 9 p.m. Eastern as opposed to 7. But, I mean, that's nitpicking. Like, this is about as good as you could hope for, I think. And, you know, the thing that sucks is that CBS Sports Network is not a Nielsen-rated channel. We're not going to be able to get the ratings, as far as I understand, unless they decide to release them because they have their own internal measurements. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I think it's a chance to tune in and see what it looks like on television. You know, that's an exciting thing on its own. And even if nothing else comes of this, if it looks beautiful and you're going to get some good clips from it, as we talked about when we first discussed this show a few weeks ago, there's some potential upside to having this happen.
I'm just trying to look up real quick, and I'm not sure if this is the right thing to look up, but I'm looking up the official broadcast demo ratings of Wednesday night shows. You did mention it's not Nielsen rated, but I mean, what are the top shows?
I don't even know.
United,
does anybody watch
Network
TV?
On ABC, The Goldbergs, The Connors, American Housewife, CBS's best one is Tough as Nails.
Fox News is the like number one show on TV right now, like Tucker Carlson and stuff.
Yeah. Okay, can we beat that, please? Sorry.
Good. If disc golf beats that, it would be so insane. I mean, like, they're doing like 4 million. So if that happened, like, it would be such a shockwave through the industry. Like, all of a sudden, like, ESPN, Fox Sports, all of the big channels are going to be banging down the Disc Golf Pro Tour's door to get disc golf on their networks. And I can just tell you right now, it's not going to happen, but no. Isn't it nice to dream?
Yeah. Now, we have good, wholesome sports content. It's hard to beat addictive poison. That's all I'm going to say about that. But I do hope that this broadcast does go well. I know the Jomez guys have been working really, really hard on it. I know Dynamic Disc went all in with this deal to really try to get this in front of a wider audience during this pandemic. And, you know, I'm really hoping for the best. Honest to God, I want to see it succeed.
Absolutely. So if you go on the UltiWorld Disc Golf site, there's links to various ways you can watch this. So if you're a cord cutter like I am, you can do a free trial on like YouTube TV or Hulu Plus Live TV or FUBU or these other various streaming networks. So if you want to just do a free trial, get the few days, watch this, cancel, that's probably what I'm going to do. That's how you can get CBS Sports Network. But if you have one of the big network packages, DirecTV, that kind of thing, you should have it in your package already. That is going to do it for today's show. Make sure to join us for our subscriber bonus segment coming up, where we're going to talk USDGC and make some too early predictions for who's taken home this year's only major title. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Charlie Eisenhood, saying so long for Jamie Thomas and all of us here at UltiWorld Disc Golf. We'll talk to you next week right here on The Upshot.
See ya.